Moncrief on News Talk.
Fatan Al-Sirani came to Ireland to study in 2019, achieved a master's in international criminal law from the University of Galway, and now works for Trocara. But she's also had to deal with what she describes as survivor's guilt. Fatan came to Ireland from Gaza, where she still has family. Fatan, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
I know it just might sound like an odd question, but could you describe a bit what it was like growing up in Gaza? Now, obviously not heaven on earth, but compared to what it's like now, I assume it was quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. It was different. I would say it has always been a life of oppression, a life of being under an occupation, a foreign occupation, people who don't speak your language, people who don't look like you, but they force all kinds of conditions on your life. They control the Israeli occupation. They control when or how you can travel, if you can at all, what kind of food you get to get inside Gaza, what kind of stuff, what kind of toys, what kind of how much you can go in the sea, and if, of course, the skies are off limit only for warplanes. So everything is controlled in that area. Now, a lot of people, when I tell them, they don't know that Gaza is on the Mediterranean Sea, which is very beautiful. When you say Mediterranean, people think of Italy, or you know, beautiful sun, and it is a beautiful place, but it's a place that was doomed with occupation that is interfering in people's life. It's hard to just be a human there, to just live. Everything is controlled.
And when you say occupation, would you see Israeli soldiers, or were you just kind of aware of a sense of being hemmed in?
In Gaza, and like the West Bank, you don't see the soldiers on the ground. Now, since the siege started, now that's in the early 2000s, the Israelis control Gaza, as in, think of it as an open-air prison. So there is the land, and they surround it from all sides. Now, all the borders, there's, of course, no airport. There are just only crossings where people can cross, for example, to Egypt or to Israel, if allowed, if they're giving the permission. But other than that, it's caged, literally. So the Israeli occupation is in the sky. There are warplanes all the time. They are on the borders, so people can't leave unless you get a special permission from the Israelis. They are in the sea. You can see also... you can see all sorts of, military boats there. So they are there. You can see them, but they are far.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. And when you were a child and you were going to school, was that fairly regular, or would it be interrupted every now and again?
Now, yeah, of course, it's not like the situation is now, because
of course, yeah,
because children for the last 2 years, they're not able to go to school in Gaza. There are no functioning schools at all. But when I was growing up, I was lucky enough to be able to go to school. But my school exams would be, say, interrupted every now and then. I remember as a child, as any child, I would feel some kind of joy because, final school exams are cancelled because of an escalation, because of something. There's no school tomorrow because, it was a night of bombings. It was like that you don't get a normal year. There's always something happening. If I want to say every month, there's something.
Yeah. And how you got to leave Gaza? It was actually an Irish government program to allow people to come and study here. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. It was the first year this scholarship started, which was in 2019. I was one of the lucky few students that were chosen to come to Ireland. I studied in Galway. I did my master's degree in NUIG. I did international criminal law. And I was very, very lucky to be able to get out with the help of the Irish government, and they get that scholarship. Now, of course, not many people get that opportunity, and it's like the golden ticket for you to go and do something you like. And for me, that was to study law and advocate for the rights of the Palestinian people, for dignity, for to live a normal life like everyone else.
When you left Gaza to come to Ireland, how did you travel here? Do you go through Egypt, or is going through Israel an option?
Going through Israel was an option. Now, that only happens because the Irish government is involved in here. Now, if it was, I would never be able to get that kind of permission. It's very hard to get. But because the Irish government was part of coordinating that travel, I was able to cross through Israel. So now it's from...
What was that like for you? If you know what I mean, because you've been living all your life in this thing and you know your life is, and all the people around you, you're kind of trapped in there.
Exactly.
And then you're suddenly in a country where that's the country that's doing that to you.
Yeah, exactly, Sean. Now, the thing is, when you grow up in Gaza, you don't get to see any, say, foreign people. Mm. You only see people that's like you and people. So it's to leave also it's something that was very interesting. But going back to now in Gaza, when I was crossing, of course it was like a dream come true first, because you know, it's a great opportunity. But now, when leaving, it was, of course, very complicated. And we waited until the last minute to get that kind of permission, even though the Irish government was helping us getting it. And going inside Israel now, again, growing up, you learn in school about the occupied lands. You know, you learn about historic Palestine.
Yeah.
And this is, for me, is off limits, because in normal days, I wouldn't be allowed in there. And now I was only allowed to cross from there, but I'm not allowed to enter Israel. I'm not, as someone from Gaza, I'm not also allowed to go to the West Bank. Mm-hmm. Now you yourself, Sean, you can go there anytime you want. You can take a plane. But for myself, having a passport that says Gaza on it, now that's off limits for me.
Yeah.
So I learned about it in school growing up, about, you know, the mountains and about the rivers. And but I never, it feels like it's part of my country, but I never get to see it.
Yeah.
And going there, it felt very surreal to be able to see what, you know, felt like wonderland for a child.
Yeah.
But it still felt like it's part of my country.
Yeah.
But it was very strange to see Israeli people. It was my first time. And to talk to them, and you know, you have to talk to the people, you know, they're on the borders and they're processing your passport, and
yeah,
so it's very strange.
Yeah, and how like, what did you sense was their attitude towards you when you produce a Gazan passport?
Well, it's you are dealing with someone that is enforcing, I want to say, a life of humiliation over you. There is this power dynamic over yourself. You know, you are the weak person there. You are the person under occupation, and they are the occupiers. It's when dealing with them, you can feel that. You can feel that this person at any moment can decide that I am a danger and I can lose my life in a second. You know, just presenting my passport to them just because I happen to be Palestinian and they happen to be Israeli. And it's just not normal. Something like this should not be allowed to happen. And Palestinians should have the right to decide for themselves, to decide their destiny on their lands. But it's not an option. And sadly, we're seeing this. We're seeing ourselves going further and further from there. With each day, you're seeing, you know, Gaza being destroyed to the last building, and we're seeing.
And just to remind people, this is not just because, you know, we tend to talk, because here we talk about Gaza and, you know, we see pictures, but it's almost abstract. This is your home. This is where you grew up. The house where you grew up in and that area, what's it like now?
Yeah, I want to touch on that point you said. It's that people hear about Palestine in the news all the time, and they see the death of Palestinians. And unfortunately, it got to a point where this feels normalized for people. Now, when I talk to a lot of people, you know, from Ireland or Europe, they tell me that, yes, we've seen Palestine in the news all our lives growing up. And especially now, you know, people, they got desensitized and to Palestinian death. And it's not something that we should allow to happen. You know, we as people, as we share humanity, we should not allow this level of suffering to be normalized, and the lives of Palestinians to be dehumanized to this point. So it's something that, you know, I urge people to always look to the personal stories, like myself, as you said, I am from there, and I feel privileged I have this this space to talk about my personal story, for people to know that, you know, behind all these numbers, there are people just like you. They feel the same feelings. They get the same trauma, the same depression. It's the same human experience, but they're born in another place where all this oppression and all this injustice is forced on them. And it's just the same. So I urge you to just look at the people and realize they're also humans, but just unlucky to be born in another place.
What family have you got? Because I understand that you have a lot of siblings who don't live in Gaza anymore, but you do still have family members there.
Yes, I have. My mom is still in Gaza, and also my sister and her family. My sister has 4 children. They're from ages 5 to 14. And they all live in Gaza. And they live together in my parents' house now, in my family house, which was partially destroyed last year. But they were able to fix however they can fix, with some plastic on windows and stuff, to make it a place where they can live. And that's where they are sheltering now. And they are they're considered one of the lucky families to still have a place, because the vast majority of residential houses and homes were destroyed. And now people are in tents. And that's the reality. So to have a roof over your head, they're considered one of the more privileged people.
And lucky, I suppose, in that they haven't had to move.
No, they had to move a few times.
Yeah.
So I, just like everyone in Gaza, over the last 2 years, they had to move from one place to another, because they were forced to evacuate so many times. And they are now. I was just talking to my mom this morning, and she was telling me how she doesn't know what to do. Now the Israelis are sending what they call explosive robots, and these drones with snipers, and there's a lot of military technology that's being sent to the north of Gaza, where my family is right now, to drive people to leave towards the south. And that's what the Israeli military has been telling people. They've been trying to force them to leave. And I was talking to my mom, and she's telling me, now they tell them there's this kind of you're being put in a place to choose between a dangerous and a dangerous place.
Yes,
now, even in the south, it's not, they call it the humanitarian
corridor.
Area.
Yeah.
Or so, but it's not safe. You know, the bombing, the shelling, it's the same in both places. But it's getting more intense where she is. And she's telling me, I don't know what to do, because if she left where they are right now, she's just risking losing the place.
Yes.
And going to a tent in the south. And being in a tent is also very dangerous and very inhumane, the conditions people are going through for 2 years now.
And are they getting much in the way of food? What's that like for them?
For them, food is just like anyone else there now. It's the same situation for people. There is severe scarcity. The Israelis did not allow humanitarian aid to go inside Gaza for so long now. People have very little food left. And because of the scarcity, it's very expensive to buy food. We're talking crazy prices that even, you know, my salary here in Dublin cannot cover that kind of prices. And they have some food, they have little food, whatever they can afford to buy with the money they have. And they share it between now my mom, my sister's family, and whatever they have, they ration, and they try to give the kids the food, you know. They
of course,
prioritize
yeah.
them.
Yeah. How is, when you talk to your mother and your sister, I know this sounds like a not very important thing, but do you get much sleep? Because, you know, there must be a lot of noise, and you're constantly on alert, waiting, you know, in case something terrible happens and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It must be, the strain must be really intense for them.
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, just imagine yourself for the last 2 years not being able to feel safety for 1 minute because there's literally no safe place there. Mm. You could be killed any minute. And that's how life is. It's just constant fear and trauma. And of course, grief, because everyone I know in Gaza have lost someone. So you have to deal with all of that at the same time while feeling absolutely no kind of safety, fearing for your life every minute. And they're not able to sleep because there are drones in the sky all the time and all the constant shelling. So imagine all these conditions over the person. Just also to mention the starvation, the famine that's happening in Gaza, and also, the lack of sleep and what it does to a human. So it's just...
Yeah. Do you have any hope?
I do, yes, I do. It's hard in these kinds of days to find hope with the dystopian reality that we're witnessing. It's definitely hell on earth, that what's happening inside Gaza. We don't have any other option. To give up is to give up on the people living there, and that should not be an option. So being in Ireland, I feel like I'm in a place of privilege. I'm in a place of, I feel empowered. I campaign with Chokra. I work with Chokra on justice in Palestine. And I feel like I'm in a place of privilege to be in Ireland, first because of the Irish people. The Irish people care, and the Irish people are active, and they're out in the streets, and they're advocating, and they're calling on the government to do something for the Palestinians, to have any measures to deliver justice for Palestinians. And that is, we can witness that, not just, you know, in the numbers, the huge numbers of people out and about in the streets, but also in the polls and the statistics. It shows that Irish people care, and it shows that it's the will of the Irish people to pass the Occupied Territories Bill, for example. And that is a bill to block Israeli settlements, goods and services from coming to Ireland and, you know, being sold in the supermarkets and so on. And that's what the Irish people want. So first, I feel a huge privilege to be here just because of that amount of solidarity. And it's something that keeps me going, you know, the kindness of the Irish people. Mm-hmm. But also, Ireland is a democracy, and that's also why I feel empowered to be advocating for justice in Palestine and Ireland. People have elected representatives, people that actually have been elected into office because people want them to be there. It's a democracy. It's where your elected representative actually listens to you. And having that kind of power, people's voices matter. And each person, if people want to do, and people do care, and if people when they contact their politicians, it matters. Their voices matter, and I encourage people to keep raising their voices and calling on the Irish government to pass the Occupied Territories Bill, because we need to see any level of accountability to the atrocities we're witnessing in Palestine.
Yeah. Fatan, thank you very much for coming in to speak to us today. That was Fatan Al-Sarani there from Gaza. But as you heard, there also now works for Trocry.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.